Greetings, and welcome to CatastropheCast.com. My name is Walter, and before we get started, I just want to say a quick apology. I am actually doing a little bit of a recording in a spot that I normally don't record in, and there's an overhead vent, so it may make for a little background noise, and I apologize about that. Today's topic is actually something that comes from one of you. Listener Jorge, who hails from Spain, sent me a link to a catastrophe that I had never heard of. It's from the 1970s. This accident happened in Spain in 1978 along a beautiful, beautiful stretch of waterfront that is in the, and I'm going to apologize now if I butcher the names, Tarragona area of Spain, which, if you're actually looking at a map, it is on the Mediterranean coast towards the north end side, towards the top. So, anyway, this beautiful little area, there's a resort there called Las Alfacas, or Alfacas, one of the two. It is absolutely beautiful. There's actually a website for it, and if you look at it, it's just stunning, all the pictures that they have of this resort. It is quite beautiful, and the resort, of course, is, like I said, right on the water. So there's a ton of people that come to the resort from Europe. So it's not just Spaniards that go there. It is people from all over Europe. If you look at their website, and there will be a link on catastrophecast.com, it'll just show a ton of beautiful pictures and all the different amenities that are available to visitors. So this resort, Las Alfacas Resort, it was there in 1978. It's, of course, just a little bit more rural. I mean, if you ever camped back in the 70s and then you've camped, you know, in the 2000s or 2010s, you'll know, of course, there's a big difference. You know, back in 1978, it was a lot more rural. So there's no niceties back then that like we would have now. The Las Alfacas Resort actually has Wi-Fi now. You know, so they have a ton of stuff that's available now that wasn't available back in 1978. They have all sorts of cabins and such, but in 1978, the big attraction was camping. There's still a big campground and camping, a lot of people that camp there today. So at the time, back in 1978, there were about 1,000 vacationers at Las Alfacas Resort, mostly German, but there were a ton of people from other countries as well. So, and to give you a little bit of background about the resort itself, the camping spot of Las Alfacas is near National Road in 340. So it's not off of a main highway. It's off of a small little road, you know, in a rural area, winding road. So, you know, you've got this beautiful place that's right on the water. It's away from just about everything. And unfortunately, it was the spot for just a horrendous catastrophe. So, on the day of July 11th, 1978, at 2:35 p.m., there was a tanker truck that was carrying 23 tons of a really highly flammable and volatile chemical called propylene. It was chugging along in 340, and it was being driven by this 50-year-old driver who had been driving for the same company for, you know, 20 years. They didn't even think that he would need any training in, you know, carrying these highly flammable liquids or anything because he had been driving so long. So 50-year-old Francisco Villena, he was driving the 23 tons of propylene, and came upon the campground area of Los Alfaques. When he did that, part of the tank that was holding all of this propylene ruptured, and it sent this vapor into the campground area. So this vapor basically started emanating from the truck and just, you know, spread throughout the campground area. Now, I have to say, when we camped when I was a kid, there were, I don't actually know the chemicals, but there were foggers. You know, there was a fogger truck that actually went around. And whenever that fogger truck went around to spray the chemicals to get rid of the fleas and you know, all the insects, I remember us kids just running through it. And I can actually see that happening here. You've got this truck who is carrying this highly flammable stuff. Nobody knew, of course, it was highly flammable. And you've got this great little vapor that's just starting to spread throughout the entire camp. And people were, you know, wondering what was going on. So they decide, let's go see what's going on. Where is this mist coming from? Now, there were eyewitness reports, and they were really inconclusive. There are basically two trains of thought as to what actually happened before the blast. Some people said that the truck itself that was carrying the tank of propylene, said that the truck blew a tire and then swerved and it crashed into a nearby building. And that's what caused the, you know, the loud explosion. Now, others actually said that the bang was the tank itself that was rupturing, and that's what caused the bang. So, whatever the case of those two, whatever the case, the tank ruptures, the mist is covering the entire campground. So, this campground at the time actually had, you know, all sorts of amenities. It also had a discotheque. And the mist drifted up to the discotheque itself. And that's where experts believe that the mist itself found an ignition source. Now, if you can imagine this huge mist that's just everywhere and saturating everything, it lit up in an instant as soon as it had that ignition source. And it ignited what was called a BLEVE. I'd never heard of it before, but it stands for Boiling Liquid Expanding Vapor Explosion. So that's I guess, what, when you lit that vapor on fire, that's what they call that type of explosion. So the vapor exploded, and it just left a massive, massive amount of destruction behind it. A few things about the vapor itself, and then the resulting fire. The fireball, once it caught, that fireball was 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. That, okay, so you consider water boils at 212. I mean, can you imagine all these people being stuck in 1,000 degree Fahrenheit flash fire? I mean, that in itself is just unreal. It's hard to even put your mind around it. The mist from this tanker truck that ruptured, it actually had spread out to a 300-meter radius. In that 300-meter radius, when the mist exploded, the resulting fire gutted 90% of the main camping area. Now, I mean, there were 1,000 people who had set up camp in the camping area at Los Alfaques. It destroyed almost everything. Now, I mean, the good news is, of course, that not all 1,000 people were there at the time, of course. But still, there were hundreds of people there. The discotheque itself, where, of course, it found the initial flame to be able to create that spark, to ignite the fireball. That burned to the ground. There were several homes that burned to the ground. The discotheque actually had 100 people in it at the time. So they died. They perished instantly. And just to give you a little bit of a background on the explosion, when this 300-meter radius mist area exploded, it left a 65-foot by 5-foot crater. I mean, that is absolutely massive. So you've got this crater where, you know, most of the mist was and where it was still falling out of the tanker truck. That is just decimated. And then, you know, 90% of this entire camping area, which held, 1,000 people, that was just 90% gone. Now, the bad thing, it gets worse, was where the truck exploded itself. As I said before, the truck was coming down on a small interstate highway, small rural highway, called N-340. Where the truck had basically been when it exploded, cut the highway in half. So you could no longer traverse from one side of N-340 to the other. If you were lucky enough to be a survivor of this blast, and you were in the south, south of this fire, you had to be taken to a hospital down in the south. If you were in the north, you'd have to be taken to a hospital in the north. You could not cross between the two. So initially, of course, there were no ambulances. Like I said, this was a little bit more of a rural area. There were no ambulances. So people who were getting to the hospital actually had to get there by private cars. That's how almost all the patients got there. Okay, now think of this. I'm in a private car and I'm driving three people to the hospital. My job is to drive. I don't have anybody who's going to be helping those people beyond, holding a wound or such. I don't have anybody there with medical training for all these people who are being transported from the explosion to the hospital. There were about 60 patients who were taken to hospitals in the north and about 80 people who were taken to hospitals in the south. Now, the thing is, you've got, there's conflicting numbers here. It said, the different documentation said that there were between 214 and 217 people who died at the scene. I know there was an official count at 215 on one set of documentation. On another set of documentation, it said the official count was 214, but I've seen that number all the way up to 217. But upwards of 270 people actually died. There was these 214 to 217 who died just instantly in this fireball. But up to 270 people and beyond actually died because of their injuries later. So there were reports that I read where people were showing up at the hospital who didn't even have blood pressure. They basically did not have any vital signs. So they had basically died en route. So, and all these people, of course, en route, they were not being given any treatment by anybody, because these were people who were just driving them. So most of the people who died en route, died because they got absolutely no treatment along the way. Now, this being in Spain, you would expect that Spain actually had the brunt. Spain carried the brunt of the number of people who died. And actually, that's not the case. All in all, 4 Spaniards died. Just 4. The rest were from all over Europe. So you've got all these people who are, you know, make it to hospitals, and then if you're lucky enough to have survived getting to a hospital and start getting treatment, it started to overwhelm all these patients, overwhelmed the hospitals in the area. So what they did was Spain actually started sending patients back to their original home countries. So the Germans went back to Germany, the French went back to France. So that's that right there. You wouldn't see that today, of course. You know, you would see somewhat of, you know, the most critical people would be treated at the hospital and not moved until they were stable, if ever. You know, the less people hurt, who are injured, they would be just diverted to further hospitals away. So most of the victims who actually died at the scene, they were actually burned beyond recognition. And if you think back, this was 1978, there were no DNA tests. So, and then further to complicate this, it was a resort by the sea in a campground. These people were on vacation. Almost all of them were just wearing bathing suits. I mean, you've got, you know, at least 214 bodies that are just at the scene, charred beyond recognition. And it's just chilling. But even with all those insurmountable odds, all of the victims were eventually identified. They actually took, you know, they took their time, and they actually did right by these people, and they were able to identify everyone. I did read a case where there were people from out of the country who were actually buried still in an unmarked grave. It took them a little while to figure out who they were. There were two different families, but they did finally identify who they were. And those bodies actually still are buried in Spain. They're not buried in their home countries. Okay, so you've got this huge explosion that happened from this tanker truck. Now, why did it happen? That's the question. There's a few mitigating circumstances. When you look at this, if just one of these things had not occurred, or, you know, been in effect, this probably would not have happened. And that tends to happen, you know, with a lot of these different issues that I podcast on. So the first circumstance, unofficially, the drivers of these tanker trucks were told, you know, don't, if you're taking some stuff into Barcelona, bypass the A7 motorway. You know, if you're familiar with, I'm familiar, of course, with the different highways in Europe, not in Europe, but in the London and the United Kingdom areas. And so I know that, like, and there, the higher the number basically means the lower the population area. So an A7 motorway is going to be, you know, that's going to be a big motorway, and it's going to be, you know, traversed by a lot of people. Whereas this N340 highway is just a little rural roadway. So anyway, these tanker drivers, they were actually told, don't take the A7 because you're going to have to pay a toll. So if you're going to take freight into Barcelona, avoid the A7. So that's the first circumstance. Second circumstance, of course, like I said before, this driver had been driving for 20 years for this company. The company didn't even train him on hazardous materials because they felt that he had enough experience to know what to do. So that's the second thing. Third thing, the tanker truck had been carrying 23 tons of propylene, like I said before. Only thing is, the tank that that tanker truck was carrying could only hold just under 19.5 tons. So it was almost 4 tons over capacity. That's pretty huge. Okay, the fourth thing. The tanker truck itself, it did not have emergency pressure valves. They were not required at the time. Now, there was a plan, this was 1978, there was a plan to update this particular truck. And of course, it's other trucks that were like it 2 years later in 1980. But of course, this came along first. When investigators were searching this, the tankers, these tankers that were coming from the gas company Enpetrol, which I believe at the time was the national petrol or gas company of Spain, because of a lack of proper tools in the equipment that was used to fill the tanker trucks, these tankers were routinely overfilled time and time and time again. So it didn't really matter if it held 19 tons. It would routinely go out with much more than that, much more than it was supposed to. Now, the fifth circumstance here that basically sealed these people's fates was that truck was originally made in 1973, the truck that exploded with the tank on it. When it was made, it was not designed for carrying flammable liquids. It just wasn't. So earlier on in its life, between 1973 and 1978, it actually had carried a whole bunch of different chemicals, a lot of them caustic. You know, these chemicals could eat through metal. They could eat through just about anything. And this tanker actually hauled a bunch of caustic chemicals for 5 years before it started carrying these flammable liquids. So that right there, you've got these other circumstances beforehand. But the fact that the truck itself was already set up for failure because it carried these caustic chemicals, that did it. It was, you know, a crowded population area plus a lack of the emergency pressure release valve, plus, you know, the overfilling of the tanks, plus a lack of monitoring of those tanks for the people who fill them, plus a history of caustic chemicals. Those things, when added up, took hundreds and hundreds of people's lives. Of course, you know, as in any catastrophe, there is an aftermath, there is a cleanup, and hopefully there's lessons learned. In this aftermath, It's I don't want to say funny, but it's almost sad funny in the fact that the first thing listed in the main article for this was the campsite was rebuilt within 6 months and reopened. I don't know. That to me is almost sacrilegious. You're dealing with all these other issues, and these people are, hey, we're back in business. That's just disrespectful to me. The good things that came out of this, but of course it came out later, I believe it started about 2 years later, Spain prohibited dangerous cargo from being transited via populated areas. So Spain basically said, no, we're not going to allow you to send these flammable materials through these populated areas like this. We're not going to have this again. And when you do, send these chemicals over the road, it's going to be at night. It's not going to be during the day. That company in petrol actually had 4 employees who were convicted of criminal negligence. Now, they later appealed and won, so they didn't serve their entire time in prison, but they, you know, they were in prison for a time. The company itself had to pay a fine. You know, if you are responsible for a person's death, especially a company, then you have to make restitution for that. Nothing's going to bring a person back, but at least it will help those who are left behind. So this company paid, from what I can tell, when you convert Spanish pesetas in 1978 to 2012 euros, because of course Spain is now on the euro, when you account for inflation, it's about 45 million euros. It does not seem like enough. Again, that's just my personal opinion. Now, this disaster that happened, it's actually been fictionalized in a 2007 movie called Tarragona, A Paradise in Flames. It is a Spanish movie. If anybody actually does have a way to get a hold of this, please let me know. I would love to be able to see this. I know it's a fictionalized version of the events. Reading over on IMDb, it does not read like any of the research that I have done, but still, it does look like an interesting movie to be able to watch. So that's it for the Las Alfacas disaster. As I said in the beginning, this was actually a listener suggestion, so thank you, Jorge, for the suggestion. If you have a suggestion for what you want to hear, and we have one more listener suggestion coming up next, you can send it to us via our homepage. If you go to catastrophecast.com, across the top, there is a link that says, what do you want to hear? So you can fill that in, send it to us, that would be great. Or use the contact button and send us an email. Or you can just go into your email client and send us an email at podcast@catastrophecast.com. Thanks for listening.